TJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia. We are diverse, independent, and yours.
Amy Gastelum here. If you want to stay in the loop on all things Making Contact, take a minute and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Or you could visit our website at radioproject.org to sign up for our weekly newsletter. Okay, here's the show.
Making contact.
You're listening to Making Contact. I'm Lucy Kang. The TV show The Bear gives viewers a behind-the-scenes look at running a restaurant in Chicago as family and work drama ensues. And food is central to the series. Characters talk about food constantly, and the camera often lingers lovingly on shots of painstakingly assembled dishes. And the hit show prompted our friends over at the podcast In Confianza with Pulso to ask the question, what would a Latino version of The Bear taste like? In Confianza host Liz Rebecca Alarcon went to Chicago's predominantly Latino Pilsen neighborhood to find out.
I'm taking myself over to one of Chicago's famous Latino neighborhoods to eat. I mean, Chicago is one of the most famous food towns in the world. Even one of the most popular TV shows, The Bear, is centered around eating and running a restaurant in the Windy City. But what about the stories of some of our Latino entrepreneurs? What's happening in the surrounding neighborhoods, and what stories do they tell of food, community, and identity? Today, we head to Pilsen to dine at two establishments. One, a mainstay in the neighborhood for three decades. The second, a newer restaurant that has embraced the complexities of being Mexican, American, and Chicagoan. I'm Liz Rebecca, and today we eat our way through Pilsen in our own version of El Oso. For the last 30 years, Eliazar Delgado has woken up every day and opened the doors to his first and only business, Cafe Jumping Bean. While it's now an established part of the historically Mexican neighborhood of Pilsen, it was a bit of an outlier when it opened in 1994. Delgado felt like he was answering a need, specifically the need for coffee in a neighborhood filled with taquerias, panaderias, and restaurant chains. Even though Delgado felt there was a gap in the neighborhood that he could fill, his concept wasn't a sure bet. It took some struggle and his own way of convincing the community that Jumping Bean would be a special addition to the neighborhood.
Tell us a bit more about where you grew up.
I grew up in the Little Village neighborhood here in Chicago until probably I was 13 years old. And then we moved to the south, farther south side of Chicago. My mom was a very diverse cook. Everything from enchiladas and fried chicken.
With some Mexican flair, I bet.
No. My dad's uncles married these two sisters from Tennessee. And when my dad got married, my mom learned to cook from these two ladies. We grew up with a traditional Thanksgiving dinner. I mean traditional. Nothing Mexican about it. There was cornbread stuffing, mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes, cranberry sauce. And people would think it was strange because all my friends were Mexican. And it's like, what? You have that? Yeah.
Pero qué rico, Eliazar, because I'm the same. My family's from Venezuela. I grew up in Miami. And I relish in the traditional Thanksgiving meal. And I always say, you know, we eat everything else all year round. Like, in my home, we also had the traditional stuffing and gravy and turkey. So I can relate to that, wanting to have that quote-unquote traditional American experience at least once a year.
When I grew up as a kid, I liked sandwiches. You know, we like different stuff. We like, you know, muffins, bagels. We grew up eating different stuff. It wasn't just pan and tacos and tortas.
Tell us if you remember your first cup of coffee or if you were a big coffee drinker growing up.
My first cup of coffee was Taster's Choice Instant. It was the flavor crystals. My mom would open up the glass jar and the little paper lid, you would peel it off. And that smell that you would get. And then, if I was lucky, she would make me a small cup.
How old were you?
Probably 8.
That is the most Latino thing ever, Eliazar. Drinking café, café con leche when you're little. I love it. So that early start and that early love of coffee, Eliazar, I know has in large part inspired you opening up this place. Am I right that you were a bike messenger before opening up this shop?
Yes, I was a bike messenger for a year before I did this. I did it for a year. I loved it. Then I got hit by a car. And that took me out, shattered my hand, tore my ligaments in my hand, and I was out. There was no way I was going to do it again. So I spent some time thinking, doing, trying to figure out what I was going to do. And it was probably a year after that I was tired, and I said, you know what, I need to do something. My brother used to hang out with a group of artists, and I would go there and hang out with them, but I noticed that they needed a place to hang out. It was always a restaurant. Restaurants are never cool with you just ordering a cup of coffee. I'm sorry, but they're not. I'm gonna sit here with a cup of coffee in my book and hang out for a couple hours. No, it's never been that way. So I told my brother one day, you know what, a coffee shop would be really cool. And he's like, yeah, you know what, that'll be really a good idea.
And I've also read that you were inspired by coffee shops in Monterrey, Mexico.
Yes.
Can you paint us a picture of one of those cafes, if you remember? I'd love for you to share a story of that inspiration and then how that led you to open up this spot here in Pilsen, Chicago.
We used to visit Monterrey all the time when we were kids. And I went back when I was 17 years old. And I started hanging out with my cousins. And then they took me to coffee shops. All of the cafes always featured artwork. They would serve coffee. People would read a book, play chess. They were doing different things. And it's like, wow, this is a cool idea. I would go back every year, and it was always the same thing. Let's go to try a different one. Oh, let's go to this one. Let's go to this one. It was something when I went to Monterrey and I saw this happening. I finally got to a point where I realized when I was home, we don't have that on the south side of Chicago. There's nothing like that here. For us, it was all taquerias, panerias, and fast food places. But that idea of a place to hang out didn't exist. So one night I was home, and I get this phone call from my brother telling me I got the perfect location for you. I'm like, what are you talking about? The coffee shop idea. I came over. I saw the spot. There's a group of guys here hanging out playing chess and other guys in the corner reading. They're just hanging out. They laid their own artwork everywhere. I'm like, oh, my God, this is beautiful. This is it. This has got to be it. Talked to the owner. She had so many requests for dollar stores, taquerias. She turned them all down. Mind you, 1994. Pilsen is nothing. Nothing what it was 30 years ago. Very traditional Mexican neighborhood. There was no Starbucks here. Dunkin' Donuts were minimum. When she heard my idea of a coffee shop, she just, like, blew up. Do it. The place is yours. Here's the keys. Get to work.
So now we're in 1994, Eliasad. You painted a bit of a picture of what Pilsen looked like in that moment. Tell us a bit about the Pilsen is not for sale movement that was going on at that time, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, the Pilsen not for sale movement started a few years after the neighborhood began to gentrify at a rapid pace. This neighborhood, because of the university closeness to downtown, became popular after the Northside neighborhood, Wicker Park and Bucktown, were gentrified and became too expensive. And this became a hip bohemian neighborhood.
Did you feel instant welcoming from the community when you opened Cafe Jumping Bean? Was there a process of accepting this new concept?
We opened on a cold, cold night, January 3rd, 6 p.m. It was freezing. We opened up a full house. It was beautiful. It stood that way for about a week. And then we started twiddling our thumbs. We would watch people go by all day. And people would come in. What are you serving? Coffee, pastries, bagels. Okay, and close the door and leave. You know,
there were no molletes at that time.
No molletes at that time. So people would tell me, hey, where's your conchas? Where's your tacos? Where's your tortas? No, I don't serve that. We have sandwiches. Sandwiches? ¿Qué es eso? What's that? I'm like, well, this is what it is. I would give them a quick breakdown, and they were like, okay, bye. And it stood that way for quite a while. But what people forgot is that I'm from the area. I am Latino. I own my own business. I'm hiring from the neighborhood. I give back to the neighborhood. that's a big thing, being part of your community, but also giving back. Our summer peaked a little bit. People started getting more intrigued. We started getting a lot of younger people, a lot of the college kids. They started doing poetry readings here. We're attracting a crowd. We were getting a full house. So it was a process of being here and sticking it out. I slowly watched the neighborhood change, but we changed with it. And we also were providing a service here. The artists in this neighborhood needed a place to exhibit their work. We rotated our artwork every 4 weeks, and from local artists in Pilsen. They would keep all their money. We would collect zero commission. We're providing a place for people to hang out. We were providing a place where kids would come after school and do their homework and meet their parents. We were providing a safe space. We were providing a lot more than just coffee.
What do you think got you over the hump? Word of mouth, confianza in your product and in your space, acostumbrarse to see you all not leaving, like maybe some of the other places. What do you think it was that caused that?
What gave me the will to keep going was, like you said, the confianza in the people, because I had regulars. They were so regulars that they all had tabs. So at the end of the month, I'd be like, hey, guys, time to pay. And that helped me. It was like, okay, this is helping pay that rent at the end of the month. You know, the families on the weekends would come. They would come with the kids. They would want to come to this place. You know, and it's like, yeah, a family of four can come and eat here and not break the bank. I don't need to charge $9 for a latte. I want you to be able to come every day and buy your latte here. So you know what? We're gonna make sure it's a reasonable price. You know, my accountant thinks I'm nuts. I wasn't going to be rich off this place, but I was, like I tell my family, I was happy.
You were part of true community, and that's what so many of us seek. I'm curious over, the 30 years of your journey with Cafe Jumping Bean, what are some of these special moments that you witnessed or were a part of that stay with you in tu corazón?
I had this one kid years ago. He came in here. He was a sixth grader and came in. And he just looked at the menu. He said, I want to try everything on your menu. I said, what? Yeah, I'm going to come in and try everything on your menu. I want to start with that. The first thing was espresso. And I'm like, no, you don't want to try that.
Yeah, but he was like, you having coffee at 8 years old, Eliasar.
He's like, yeah, I want to try that. I said, okay. I gave it to him. He didn't like it. I said, here, put a little milk and sugar in it. He liked it. The next day, cappuccino. By the time he came back, latte. He went through I saw this kid graduate 8th grade. I saw him go through high school. I saw him go through college. Then he came back. I saw him with his girlfriend. Years later, they disappeared, and they came back. They were married, and they had kids. And I'm like, wow, this is something. I had employees that started when they were 15 years old, and I'd seen them graduate high school, graduate college, have their own families, have their own business. It's something to see all that. I've seen people come here and take photos from their wedding because, oh, this is where we met, this is where our first date was, and all this stuff happening. I'm here. I'm part of this community. It's here.
It's just so amazing to hear these stories. I wanted to jump to another subject. Chicago is known to be a foodie town, and this area is the epicenter of good Mexican food, Pilsen, here in Chicago. One of the most popular shows right now is The Bear, a series about opening a restaurant in Chicago. If you had to do your own version of El Oso about Cafe Jumping Bean or starting a Mexican-run restaurant in Pilsen, what would be important for you to include?
My biggest thing would be my employees. Yeah, they're the backbone of this place. I mean, I can't tell you how much I've relied on my staff over the years. You know, being here 30 years, I have employees who have probably 20 some, so you have two that are 20 years with me, or 15 year and 18 year. This is their home. So that's what was important to me. But working side by side with your employees is the ultimate thing.
As I'm here talking to Eliasar, his eyes are watering as he's talking about how much he truly cares about his employees and the staff here. Así que les puedo decir que he means every single word that he's saying. And I'm very touched to see that, Eliasar. I hope we can...
Obviously, I didn't just come to Cafe Jumping Bean to talk with Delgado. I also came here to eat. The first thing I tried was one of the cafe's most popular drinks.
Eliasar recommended that I try the choco espresso mixed with Mexican chocolates. Warm, smooth, buttery, cinnamony, chocolatey, mocha-y, and the perfect kick for this morning.
And to go with my choco espresso, I tried one of the cafe's signature breakfasts, a mollete.
Wow. It's so good. It is light and airy and crisp and seasoned. And it's not very greasy, which for a breakfast at 8 a.m., like, I'm all for a big breakfast, but I was a little worried it might be heavy, but it is light and perfect.
Well, thank you. 15 years ago, I was in a cafe in Mexico City, and I saw this thing, molletes. In Mexico, it's a bolillo, black beans, cheese, a side of pico de gallo. I tried it. I was like, oh, my Lord, this is so good. And it serves so many people. So I brought the idea over, and it was a huge success. We started adding aguacate to it. People have made it their own. They do diced ham. Then we brought on the vegan chorizo.
Oh, my gosh. The food is 10 out of 10, Eliezer. 10 out of 10. Clearly, your life's work has been much more than feeding the people of Pilsen. You've created a space for connection and community building like we've been talking about the entire conversation. How have the business and the people you serve changed you?
I was always very quiet, very quiet. And I learned a lot from this community just by walking down the street to the banks, saying hello to people. That feeling of community in the morning, it's beautiful. The door was always open here for everyone. That feeling of seeing somebody every day and knowing what they want is great. My Spanish has always been good, and my Spanish has jumped to another level because we still have, as much as Pilsen has changed, we still have that large Mexican community that comes in here. So I make it a point that when I hire, that you need to know some Spanish or willing to learn it, because I still have the paletero who comes in and wants a cup of coffee, and I don't want him to come in and say, quiero un café, and the person to say, what? So I make sure my employees know, listen, there has to be some degree of Spanish in your vocabulary. I don't care what it is, or you need to be willing to learn it.
What advice would you give to young Latino entrepreneurs who are trying to follow in your footsteps, Eliezer?
If you believe in something and really believe in it, don't give up. It took me 5-6 years, and people told me, call it quits. You know what? You're not making any money. You need to, you know, move on. So it's exciting that, you know what? If you believe in something, do it. Do it 100%, not 80%, you know, not 99%. Give it 100%. Be there. Know your business. Don't just sit down and move your finger and tell people where to go. Be part of it. Work side by side with the people. You know, you're not going to do it every day, but you need to make sure they know that you're invested in that, in your business as much as they are.
When we come back from the break, we're going to meet two of those young Latino entrepreneurs who are giving it 100% just a few blocks from where Cafe Jumping Bean is.
I'm just jumping in to remind you that you're listening to Making Contact. If you like today's show and want more information, or if you'd like to leave us a comment, visit us at our new website, focmedia.org. There you can access today's show and all of our prior episodes. And now, back to the show.
If you walk 8 minutes east from Cafe Jumping Bean, you'll come across a restaurant that's not as old as Delgado's beloved cafe, but like Jumping Bean, it's a restaurant that aims to find a balance between the neighborhood's Mexican identity along with American staples. And it's all there in the restaurant's name, Pochos. We'll get more into the significance of that word shortly. In the meantime, know that it's the brainchild of Miguel Hernandez and Irene Acosta. But first, I was hungry.
Okay, Pulso fam, I'm now here at Pochos back in Pilsen, and I am about to have a delicious lunch when I called to ask Miguel, the owner of the restaurant, what I should order. He told me I should get shakshuka, which actually happens to be one of my favorite meals ever. Oh my gosh, my mouth is watering. I literally can't tell you all how excited I am about this bite I'm about to have. Okay, here I go. Such rich flavors. The chicken was an excellent addition. It doesn't usually come with chicken, this dish, but wow, it's so good. It's creamy. I can see some chile in here. My eggs are running over the pepper and tomato sauce, if you can imagine that. And now I'm about to take this big chunk of crusty bread, dip it in, and have another bite.
I sat down with the two owners to talk about how their identity shows up in everything from how the restaurant looks to what the customers eat and the ways all business owners should embrace what makes their communities unique.
Hi, Irene and Miguel. Our first question for all of our guests is, what is the last thing you told someone in confianza?
That I have a lot of trauma.
Oh, that's deep.
I was thinking about our green salsa recipe.
Are you going to tell us in confianza what that recipe is, Irene?
No, precisely the conversation was about how I'm not going to disclose that recipe.
I love it. Were you all picky eaters growing up at all?
No, I wasn't. And I grew up in a household where mom cooked, you know, every day there was something homemade. So getting things like pizza, McDonald's, things like that were like special occasions. So I grew up with a lot of Mexican home cooking.
I also, I'm not a very picky eater, but growing up as a kid and watching PBS, I saw a lot of people cook on TV. So I always loved trying new ingredients and being able to ask my parents to, you know, buy new things at the grocery store and promising, you know, a meal for them.
What about other spaces here locally in Chicago where you felt connected to community? Obviously, if there's food involved, even better. But where else did you all feel at home here in the city?
I think growing up Latino in a city like Chicago, like, we're fortunate to have so many family. So it was, if it was either home or my grandma's house and my aunt's house, and there was always food involved, right? And I think being a woman in the Latino culture, you're always involved in the kitchen, right? So when you're young, you're helping out with the little things and kind of eventually grow up and get to do more and more hands-on stuff.
One of my tia Chila, she was a CPS lunch lady, and she was a lunch lady for many years. So she'd always come home with a bunch of, like, leftover pizza, chicken nuggets. But she was always creative, and she was always a very good cook, and it's someone that I kind of look up to as being a chef and a home cook.
And you all both identify as Mexican-American. How much is that connected to Chicago as part of that identity? Are those two identities intertwined, Chicago and a Mexican-American? Are they different?
Yeah, I think that it's almost like we have our own subculture, because I think that being Mexican-American is one thing, but then being Mexican-American in a huge major city, right, you're exposed to so many different cultures, and you grow up eating different foods and speaking different languages, and I think inevitably that does create, you know, a particular kind of identity, right?
I created a great identity because I feel like in Chicago you can find some of the best Mexican ingredients, whether they're imported or made here. I think our tortilla game is super strong. And I can't really pinpoint another area that has the variety and the quality of tortillas that we have here in Chicago.
So fighting words.
I love it. Let's get into the restaurant. Tell us about the name. What does the word pocho mean for those who don't know?
It used to be a derogatory term to say you're maybe someone that left Mexico and really Americanized, or you're the sons and daughters of someone from Mexico that doesn't really understand Mexican culture, right? But I think more and more there's us that identify like pochos and don't see it as a bad thing. We just see it as something that's different, right? We grew up on this side of the border. We have love for our roots and where our parents came from, but we certainly identify as American as well.
When you grow up Mexican American here and you travel to Mexico, you're not Mexican enough, right? You can't pronounce the words properly, so you get made fun of. And then here in America, you're not American enough sometimes. So you can find yourself kind of in that middle ground, but we definitely want to embrace that and be able to show that, you know, we have more than just one culture. We have, you know, two big cultures.
So. You both come from culinary backgrounds. Walk the Pulso fam through your journey in the culinary world and then to opening the restaurant.
I was always more of a home cook, but I did start working in the food kind of industry right out of college. Like, my first job ever was at a, like, sandwich shop. Then I worked at the cafeterias in college and kind of eventually made my way into restaurant world. I hosted, I served, so I got to do a little bit of different things in the restaurant industry, work in different concepts from fast casual to fine dining. And pretty early on, I gauged, you know what, I really want to open my own restaurant one day. So I think I took advantage of a lot of the opportunities that were presented, kind of with a very clear focus of, I'm going to come in, I'm going to see what works, why does it work. When I don't understand something, I'm going to ask questions. Like, I'm always going to learn as much as I can and kind of take that knowledge with me.
I started super young at, I think, 14 years old, still in high school, working restaurants. And I've done everything from fine dining, fast casual. I've cooked. I've been a busser, runner, server. I've done it all. And I just have this huge appreciation for the whole culture that is the restaurant culture, especially here in Chicago.
We already talked about Chicago being a huge foodie town, you all. And one of the most popular shows right now is The Bear. Have you all seen it? Know about it?
Yes.
If you had to do your own version of El Oso about pochos or starting a Mexican-run restaurant in Pilsen, what would be important for you to include?
All the sacrifice and hours and blood, sweat, and tears it takes to open up a restaurant, especially through a pandemic, to really just strive and, you know, stay open without any assistance from the government.
I would make sure we cover how much fun it is. I swear, like, the funniest people work in restaurants. It's not like we interview with that in mind, but it just always works out for us. And all the jokes behind the scenes that take place that make it worth, yeah, all the hard work, I would for sure show that.
I love that. I love that. Okay, so obviously this is a podcast, you all, so we want to paint a picture of taste, sounds, and smells for our audience. And I really want our audience to be able to imagine the place that we're sitting in right now. Can you walk us through, maybe even as literally as you can, the decor of the place, what it here has cultural significance, details that you want the audience to know?
Yeah,
I think one of the big pieces that I really enjoy and really kind of think pocho is the mural when you first walk in. It's a mural that has a lot of different forms of cacti that you find in Mexico. But then right underneath that is this calligraphy from this amazing graffiti artist from Chicago named Tubbs.
I wanted to ask you all the deeper meaning of pochos. Obviously, you're here to serve delicious brunch food, but you're more than that. Any restaurant is more than that. It's a community space. It's a gathering space. You've changed the community for sure by being here and everything you've contributed. But now I'm curious about how has the community changed you all?
Man, that's a really loaded question. That's a lot has happened in the last 5 years. We were so fortunate to find a home in Pilsen because it's a neighborhood of pochos. I mean, it's been a predominantly Latino Mexican community since the 80s. We kind of landed in like the perfect neighborhood given what we represent, and continuing to find so many customers that identify also as pochos is just kind of reinforces that what we're doing is correct and that we can offer a home for, you know, an ever-growing group of pochos.
That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me, Pulso Fam. We'll be back soon in Confianza.
That was the voice of Liz Rebecca Alarcón in a story from the podcast In Confianza with Pulso. To find out more, including where you can hear the full story, head over to our website at focmedia.org. And that does it for today's show. I'm Lucy Kang. Thanks for tuning in to Making Contact.
Broadcasting to you live from Burnaby Mountain, BC, we are CJSF 90.1 FM, and we are diverse, independent, and yours.
On Wings. You can only understand the full picture by going there. Renowned freelance journalist Victoria Roschina lived by that motto. managing to get into many places she was not wanted, to ask probing questions and collect verified facts. In 2023, she crossed into Russian-occupied regions of Ukraine, following up allegations that around 16,000 missing civilians were being tortured in unofficial